Welcome to Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Bradley Chambers. Fraser is traveling this week, so we have a special guest. But before we get started, let's thank our three sponsors for tonight. First sponsor tonight is Squarespace. You can start building your website today at squarespace.com. Use the offer code PEOPLE at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace, build it beautiful. The show is also brought to you by Jamp Software. They provide IT staff with enterprise tools to power widespread use of technologies such as Macs, iPads, iPhones in schools and businesses across the world. This show is also brought to you by Shobi. It's an iPad app for paperless classrooms. Shobi makes it fast and easy to assign, collect, and review student work and then provide rich feedback with annotations, voice notes, and more. So we'll tell you more about the sponsors as the show goes on. So as I mentioned, Fraser is traveling this week, and of course, I don't think his school is quite done yet, even though here in the U.S. we have finished up. It's kind of a tradition that a lot of schools try to finish before Memorial Day, and it's a little early this year. So we thought we'd bring on a special guest host. So today we have Nicholas Cole Farrell, which is Nicholas. You've been listening, I think, since the beginning, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm a self-admitted out of school super fan.
Yeah, number one fan, I guess, as they would say in the business. But okay, because I didn't know you until we started the show. I think you may have followed me on Twitter, and so we've gotten to connect over the years. So it's definitely good to finally have you on. So tell our audience a little bit about who you are and where you work.
Yeah, this is there's a short story and a long story there, and I guess I'll give you a little bit of both. But I'm the director of technology at the Brandeis School in San Francisco. We're a K-8 Jewish day school located right in San Francisco. We have about 400 students. And in my role, I'm responsible for sort of the IT and the systems aspect, as well as the educational technology program and the library and media resources program. So it's really one of those pieces where, you know, technology becomes the catch-all for a lot of programs. But that's also really exciting for me. Actually, next year we're adding a fourth piece, which is innovation. And in a lot of ways, that's really why I'm here today or this evening to talk to you. And so super excited to be here. As you said, I've been listening for a long time. Before I was in Europe, I was in Germany, in Berlin, working as a high school and middle school history teacher, but also sort of an ad hoc technology coordinator, director of technology. In a lot of ways, those titles kind of shift. But for me, my background is very much as an educator, and I've sort of come to the IT and system side of things, you know, as sort of a self-learner. So, again, it's a really exciting field to be in, but I don't need to really tell you or your listeners about that. They already know that.
It's interesting. So you've really been across the world with various jobs. And one thing I'm curious about, like when you were in Europe and you were coming back to the U.S., what's it like applying for a job when you're literally halfway around the world?
That's a really great question, Bradley, actually. So we're just really thankful for Skype. So both my wife and I are in education, and we both applied for jobs. And it's really hard to sort of have yourself stick out in a pile of resumes. But we were really lucky that having kind of this international experience, we were over there for just about 8 years in Germany. You know, that's really appealing to some places sometimes, in schools especially. I speak three languages. You know, I only really use English and German now here in California. But, yeah, it's just it's kind of that depth of experience. I guess a few weeks ago on the show, you had Josh Raub, and he really kind of spoke about that as well, is that although the school might be in a different country, the experience is not dissimilar from the experience in the United States. So having an international background but also school experience is really can make the difference sometimes.
Well, it's really one of those ways that technology has brought us all drastically closer, where you can, you know, communicate. And I mean, learning is universal, and learning methodologies and theories that doesn't. Your kids in the U.S. are probably going to learn very similar to the way that kids in Germany do. I mean, kids are kids, and curriculum is curriculum.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. And in a lot of ways, you know, there's a lot of exciting work coming out of Europe as well. And as we get into the maker movement, you know, that kind of has a dual background, both in Germany and in Europe, as well as in the United States. So in a way, I've kind of become accidentally well positioned to sort of pull on both of those histories and put them together for a program at our school, as well as working with some other schools in the Bay Area.
Before we move on, let's thank our first sponsor of the night. It's the fine folks at Squarespace. Now, you guys, if you listen to podcasts, you've heard Squarespace sponsor a lot of podcasts over the years. But they keep coming back because new people keep signing up. And Squarespace is a fantastic place to build a website. My blog is hosted on it. Never had to worry about it going down. Don't have to worry about any software upgrades. It just works. I've got at least 10 sites hooked to my Squarespace account. It's my go-to place to build a website. So when you sign up with Squarespace, you get a website that looks professionally designed regardless of your skill level. You don't have to code anything. It's intuitive, and they have easy-to-use tools. They've also got state-of-the-art technology powering your site. It's secure. It's stable. There's no upgrades to do. You don't have to manage plugins. It just works. It's trusted by millions of people, among the most respected brands around the world. It starts at just $8 a month, and if you sign up for a year, you get a free domain name. So to me, it's worth it to sign up for a year just for that free domain name. So if you want to, if you have an idea for a website for your school, for your club, for your baseball team, for a business, go to squarespace.com, and you can get a free trial today with no credit card required. And when you decide to sign up, because I know you will because you'll love it, use the offer code PUPIL, P-U-P-I-L, and you'll get 10% off. Squarespace, build it beautiful. So, you know, I will be honest. I know nothing about the Maker Revolution sans what I've been reading on your Twitter feed. And so, like, you know, you've been tweeting a lot about that recently. It seems like you've been pretty active on the conference circuit. And I imagine that's it's going to be nice being in San Francisco because a lot of the big conferences are out there.
Right, right. That's actually that's very true. In fact, there's too many. And for me, it's always a challenge balancing which conference is going to be worthwhile to pull me away from my students and my work. So, yeah, that's a real challenge. But in a lot of ways, it's really exciting to be in the Bay Area in terms of the maker movement. It's really based out of San Francisco, here in San Francisco, Oakland, Berkeley. We're really kind of an epicenter. I remember a couple of years back, you had Don Orth on. I think it's maybe when you were on paternity leave, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
and he's down there in Silicon Valley, so he's about 45 minutes south, or his school, Hillbrook. He's left that school to go work for some fruit company, I think, in Cupertino. I'm not sure, but they were doing pretty great work down there in Silicon Valley, and in a lot of ways that really radiates up here at San Francisco, and we kind of feed back down to Silicon Valley. And without, you know, getting too far into the geography, we're sort of this 45-minute space between the two locations, and innovation really is key here, and that's what's really exciting to be in a school. A lot of companies really trying to reach out and you know, test out their products in schools and see what teachers and students are doing with them. So that's been really great. But in terms of the maker movement, yeah, it's an absolutely exciting thing. And you know, often in education, we see this thing where we sort of see these fads coming in, right? We see technology in the classroom, and for us, sometimes we kind of roll our eyes and say, well, you know, they're not necessarily fads. These are actual real changes that we're making, but they have a pedagogical background. And for us, that's really key, is that the maker movement in a lot of ways is kind of a rephrasing of some of the ideas that we've had in school. If you can think back to sort of the wood shop, I guess I don't want to show my age as an educator, but if we think back the wood shop of our school days, or in a lot of ways the computer lab kind of came after that, the maker movement really is a blend of the wood shop and the computer lab, and taking those two ideas and really putting them together. So blending the theoretical and the physical aspects of learning, for me, from an educational background, it's really exciting to see those pieces kind of click into place together. Sorry, go ahead. You were
that's a great point and a great analogy. Because when I was in high school, we did have like a metals class and they called it a construction class, but right. it was really woodworking. And I didn't think about that this is the blending of that. And because a lot of schools I know don't have metalworking, mm-hmm. don't have woodshop classes anymore. And this is a way to kind of, and even people that necessarily wouldn't be into that normally, this is a way to kind of get them into that and expose them to those new fields and help them get new skill sets.
That's exactly it, Bradley. In a lot of ways, I think that sometimes in intellectual circles, we sort of stigmatize that kind of learning. We think of that as the vocational track rather than the academic track. I know that in Germany, the educational system is very much tiered. So sort of some students go in the vocational track, some go in sort of a university prep academic track. But in a lot of ways, we're realizing that those feed in together. Those are different kinds of learning, but in a lot of ways, those are very similar kinds of learning. If we can sort of take the stigma out of going into metal shop or going into wood shop, but saying, hey, this is a way to connect those ideas that we have in a classroom, but with our hands. And in a lot of ways, if we can use our hands for learning, we can sort of round out that sort of headier or more intellectual kind of learning. There's just been incredible research that's been done. I know that Fraser, and trust me, I practiced pronouncing his name just in case I needed to say it. I know that's an ongoing theme on the show.
It's the ongoing joke. I took 2 years to pronounce it right.
and if I ever meet Fraser Hess someday, that same piece will come up. But for us, it's really couching this maker movement, but in this idea of pedagogy. So constructivism, Jean Piaget, I know that he's been mentioned on the show before, and Seymour Papert as well from the MIT Media Lab. But what their approach is really is that students construct knowledge based on their experience over time. So in that way, if they can have a physical artifact of their learning, it's very tangible, and they can sort of see the results of an idea coming to production or to fruition. So the maker movement really takes that idea of having an idea, prototyping it, experimenting with it, and then producing it. But the last component really is reflecting and sharing on that and sharing it with the larger community. So I really like the openness of the movement. I used to be a professional musician. We kind of talked about it a little bit in the pre-show, but I kind of see the maker movement as having some of that ethos of the punk rock movement, which is sort of everyone can do it. And I really like that part of it, is that there's no hierarchy among makers. It's sort of you're a maker, I'm a maker. And you had said that you had known very little about the maker movement coming into it, but in a lot of ways, you're kind of the target audience for it, and students kind of just coming in and having fresh eyes and fresh minds.
One of the things when you were saying that, I was thinking back to when I was in school, and I was thinking back to my drafting class, and I took 4 years of drafting in high school. Sadly, don't remember any of it because it has been a few years. But I remember the classroom it was in our vocational hallway. And it was Corona Cross was our metal and our construction class. And I'm thinking back, and when you think about this maker movement, you can see those classes all kind of melding together, where you're building it, and you could build something in the drafting lab. Then you go and literally make it, and you can tinker with it. And, there's just been this big push. Well, you're right when you said there's kind of been a stigma around these vocational trainings. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, if you're college prep, well, you don't need to know how to do woodworking.
Right.
Well, that's not true. We had this big hour of code push. Everybody needs to have some basic coding skills. Not everybody's going to be a software programmer.
Right.
It's good to have those basic skills, though, maybe be able to understand a little bit of it. But I own a home. I mean, you could say that doing some basic woodworking and basic construction and home repair is way more relevant to most people than coding would be in what they'll actually do in their lives. And so I think this is kind of a neat thing that's coming, because it's getting people who are normally just into digital things, ones and zeros,
right,
into actual physical things and how they actually are made.
No, that's a really good point, and I'm right there with you. My wife and I just bought a home this February, and I'm sort of I'm sad about this. My father was in the building trades, and he ended up pushing me more towards academics and saying, well, if you study hard, you won't have to do this. And now here I am in my mid-30s looking at YouTube videos to try to learn how to do these home improvement projects, and kind of a little bit sad about the fact that I didn't have that training in school. But you do make a really good point there. And for me, the maker movement is about understanding that the walls between subjects can come down. There's been a big push on STEM, which is for everyone who knows it, just bear with me on this, but for those of you who are just learning, it's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, and understanding that there's not just bridges between those subjects, but in fact, the silos of those subjects can come down, the walls can come down. And a lot of the learning looks very similar, and sometimes it's just a little bit of a different approach to it, but the learning that happens and the learning outcomes can really be similar. So if we can put our students in an environment where those walls are down, you know, there might be some really exciting learning that can happen. I have a background as a Montessori educator, and there's, you know, also the Reggio Emilia approach of really putting the child first and really having it be student-centered learning. And from there, letting, you know, sort of inquiry, letting exploration and discovery happen. So if we can take those walls down, and, you know, sometimes they're physical walls, sometimes they're sort of theoretical walls, but if we can create a space where students are working on projects, and whether it's taking a drafting piece and going across the hall and prototyping it, I mean, I think that's a great example, Bradley. I might use that one if you don't mind.
No, you can. That's a freebie from me.
Yeah, thanks.
I want to get more about what this practically looks like day to day. But before we move on, let's thank our next sponsor of the night. It's the fine folks at Shobee. Now, Shobee is an iPad app for paperless classrooms. With Shobee, teachers can quickly and easily assign, collect, and review student work on their iPads, and they can then provide rich feedback to students by adding annotations, text notes, and voice notes directly onto documents. Students can show their learning creatively by submitting to Shobee from thousands of compatible apps or by completing assignments with Shobee's built-in tools. Shobee keeps everyone organized with individual student assignment folders, email, and push notifications. Now, Shobee Basic is free, so if you want to get started with your classroom, you can go to Shobee.com or just search for Shobee in the App Store. That's S-H-O-W-B-I-E. Again, totally free. Now, if you love it and you want to upgrade to Shobee Pro, they have a special deal for out-of-school listeners. Go to Shobee.com/out-of-school, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes. If you buy Shobee Pro for 5 teachers, they'll give you 5 teachers for free for a full year. So again, that's Shobee.com/out-of-school. Thanks to Shobee for sponsoring the show this week. So take us, like, to the basics. Like, let's say someone's listening and, like, they know a little bit about the maker movement, and they're thinking, I'd like to start this at my school. What do they buy?
That's a really great question, too. I'm sorry I keep coming back with you. That's a great question.
That's okay.
No worries. Sorry. For the maker movement, it's really pretty simple. It's imagination. That's really what we need, and sort of a willingness to experiment. You can get a makerspace. You could put a makerspace in for $100. You can put a makerspace in for $1 million. It really scales, and it just, in a lot of ways, it depends on what you want the outcomes to be and how much you want to go in on it. So a lot of spaces that I've seen, in both in Europe and here in the United States, it starts small. It's not sort of a build it and they will come approach. I mean, I think you guys talked about that on the deployment episode or the deployment series, is that you don't sort of just bring the devices in and hope that it works. There's so much planning that needs to be done. And a lot of ways with the maker movement, that's there too. And I think that's something to be mindful about. But we've seen spaces go in public libraries. We've seen them go in the corner of a classroom. We've seen them become full built out spaces in old computer labs and old wood shops, which is also kind of interesting in that they're sort of the heirs to those spaces, as we talked about earlier. But, you know, really, it's about a mindset. It's about sort of an openness to the experimentation and to process. That's kind of one of the keys. So, you know, it can look like pipe cleaners, and it can look like popsicle sticks, and it can look like googly eyes, or it can look like CNC machines, 3D printers, laser cutters, hand tools. You know, this really scales. And so for us here at Brandeis, we're looking at ways. So we actually don't have a makerspace yet. We just got our project funded by our community, which was so exciting that we sort of put the project out there, and it was our big sort of fund-a-need capital campaign this year, and our families are so behind it. And that's what's so exciting, is that we've sort of done the research over the last year and visited schools and libraries and community centers and universities and really gotten a feel for what it looks like. And we're actually going to be putting in two separate spaces. So one of our spaces is going to be about one-third of our current library, and the other space is going to be in the old technology lab. So what we're going to do is sort of split it onto two levels. If you can use this model that you had talked about the drafting room and the metal work room across the hall, we're going to have sort of a light tinkering space where students can sort of come up with initial ideas, you know, write on whiteboard tables and sort of develop their ideas, and then cross the hall and walk around the corner and go into the sort of heavier duty prototyping space where they can print it out on a 3D printer, or they can, you know, take a wood block or a piece of vinyl and do sort of reductive or subtractive fabrication, where they can really make a physical model of what their idea is. So, you know, the answer is this, that, and everything. That's really what the maker movement has in terms of what you need to set up a space. But what I would encourage people who are interested in would just, you know, hop on Twitter, hop on makered.org. Those two places are really good resources for some of the ideas that are floating around. I mean, it's really taking off. We just had a maker fair here in the Bay Area, and I think depending on when this episode comes to air, I think it's about June 12th or 13th. President Obama is hosting a maker fair on the White House lawn, which, I mean, it doesn't really get much bigger than that. That's really exciting, too.
Well, you know, we talked about the maker movement can help break down silos. I mean, you could even take it a step further outside of the designing and building, and then you could even branch out into selling.
Well, that's exactly it. And it's... In addition to all these other things that I've done in my past, as I said, I was a history teacher, and American history was really one of my focuses. And, you know, we're looking at these places all around the U.S. I was just in Detroit the other day. We're looking at Detroit and Pittsburgh. We're looking at Cleveland. And these old manufacturing towns, they're actually Baltimore as well. They're becoming sort of the sites for these pop-up maker movements. And the question is, why is that happening there? You know, really what it is that these are traditional industrial places, homes of manufacturing. So in a lot of ways, those pieces are there. Those skills are there. You know, maybe it's the grandparents of these students, or, you know, the tool shops still stand. So that piece, and that's also a piece that the maker movement is looking at, is entrepreneurship. And in a way, maybe it's too ambitious, but looking at sort of rebuilding the American manufacturing base, you know, that can happen too. There's an after school club in Baltimore that I had a chance of meeting the folks a couple weeks ago. And what they're doing is they're working with small businesses throughout Baltimore and trying to have them manufacture components for them, or, you know, working on scaling that within Baltimore and seeing if they can sort of start a micro manufacturing movement in their own community. And how exciting is that, having a school being involved in that piece? I mean, that's great, right?
Yeah, I'm thinking back to some of the classes that I did in like later in high school than in college. I remember this class I did in college that was like, you know, helping you do a business plan. And so you could take this, like, this could be about product management. This could be about marketing. This could be about building a business plan. Like, this could start. I mean, even if it was like you never actually sold it, you could take students through like the life cycle of a product, or even like almost create departments.
Absolutely.
So if you have like this classic, okay, who wants to do marketing? You guys are in this group. Who wants to do accounting? You guys are in this group.
Right.
And you could like literally build a faux company with these products, even if you never plan to sell them. And this is like legitimate real world experience. Because
for goodness sakes, absolutely. And capturing, you know, having someone be the recorder, having someone, you know, take a video of the process, build your own website. I mean, you know, this is it, Bradley. This is real learning.
Yeah. And again, like, let's say the marketing department doesn't like something about the product. Like, then they can go back and talk to the engineering folks and say, look, we think this aspect isn't as desirable as this. And then it's like collaboration and learning to get along with people. I mean, people say, like, how is this going to help me in my job? I mean, like, when they're, I don't know, doing science or history.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, it's like, no, this is relevant to your job because you're doing the types of things you'll be doing in business depending on what you're interested in. So, yeah, I kind of never thought about that until today, that it could be a way to basically help people become entrepreneurs and business managers and good employees, like, while doing something at school.
That's exactly it. Yeah, it's really, really exciting in that way. So Stanford University, which is just down the road here, they've really worked on it. They have a design school there called the D School, and they have this kind of design thinking approach, and I think it's been sort of talked about a little bit on the show, but that's another piece that really kind of clicks in with the whole maker movement, is this process of researching, ideating, prototyping, iterating, implementing, and working with that. So if you're talking about the sort of faux marketing department of this, I don't know, do we dare call it a startup? Is that too soon to use that term? But if we're building sort of a micro business within a school or within a group, the marketing folks can come back and sort of iterate or help the design folks think about how their product looks and how, you know, develop empathetic understanding so what their end user would look like. So absolutely. I don't know, like, should we just do this right now? Should we just start our business? I'm ready for it.
Yeah. Yeah, we got kids running it. I mean, let them figure it out. Wait a minute, it's like a modern-day sweatshop. Yeah, kids doing all my marketing. Before we move on, let's thank our final sponsor of the night, the fine folks at Jamf Software. Listen, you guys know Jamf, been with us for a long time. They provide IT staff with great tools that power widespread use of Apple devices in your schools and your businesses, Macs, iPads, iPhones, and even Apple TVs. They have a great app for teachers called Casper Focus that allows them to take control of their classroom deployment right from their iPad. It allows teachers to quickly get a student's attention, conduct secure exams within an app, select a specific Apple TV, choose and distribute iBooks, and even initiate AirPlay right from within Casper Focus. Learn more about the Casper Suite and Casper Focus at jampsoftware.com. That's jamfsoftware.com. Thanks to Jamf for sponsoring the show this week.
On a personal note, we're big Jamf customers here. We just signed up for 3 more years. We can't say enough good things about their product. So,
well, yeah, and it's one of the things I don't think people here in the U.S. realize is Apple is a reseller of Jamf, so you can actually, like, bundle your Jamf cost into your Apple lease.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And pro tip, if you are doing a 3-year Apple lease, make sure your MDM is also 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I had a school one time that they did 3-year Apple lease, and then for some reason the MDM was only for a year. It's like, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
So we're going to have a ton of links in the show notes. Like, if people, things we didn't talk about, if you're wanting to get started, we're going to have some books and some just more information. So anything else you want to say about the maker movement? Any last words of wisdom for someone that maybe is on the fence?
Sure. So for me, I think the most exciting part is that it's so open and so democratic. So it's not something that's just for this small segment of the population. A lot of work has been done about getting girls and young women involved in it, and I think that's the most exciting thing, getting this whole sort of segment of our school population that for various reasons aren't kind of part of that conversation, getting them involved, and that's so exciting. And I love that it's also, there's a real focus on getting underserved communities, getting more urban environments involved, and really everyone's a maker. That's sort of the motto, and makered.org uses the every child a maker, and I really kind of feel that, is that we all are, and what I like about it too in a way is that it kind of flips the model of student and teacher, is that, you know, you sort of have that flattened hierarchy where the teacher can learn along with the student. And I've seen, you know, a quote class in a makerspace where teachers are right there experimenting and prototyping along with students, and the smiles on the students' faces and the teachers' faces, that's really worth it for me, is seeing that lifelong learning happening side by side. So get out there, take a risk, and it's really exciting. And there's so many more resources out there, and there'll definitely be a bunch in the show notes. And just get on and start sharing. It's an open movement. It's about sharing and collaborating, you know, posting, if you come up with a design, posting that to sort of a GitHub type place and sharing that out and having somebody come back and iterate on that and help you improve your work. So take a risk, get out there. It's really exciting.
Yeah, I've seen some things on Twitter over the years, like people building custom like wall mounts for different kinds of access points, and they'll post the plans on there so other people can build them as well. Neat stuff.
Right.
Nicholas, thanks for coming on the show. We appreciate you taking the time. If folks want to learn more about you, where can they find you around the internet?
Sure. So I recently repatriated my old Twitter account, so I'm at N Cole Farrell, ColeFarrell, and ColeFarrell.me is my Squarespace hosted website. And I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to see what you're up to, and if you have any questions, send them through.
So thanks everybody for listening this week. Fraser will be back next week. Don't forget, if we're on iTunes, itunes.com/out of school. We'd love if you could take a moment and leave a review. That helps new people find the show. Thanks to our sponsors, Jamp Software, Squarespace, and Shobi. I am Bradley Chambers on Twitter, and I'm at chambersdaily.com on the web. And we'll have a lot of links in the show notes at outofschool.net, and we'll have links that you can, if you want to connect with Nicholas, you can do that as well. And we'll see you guys next week.